You are listening live to the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll dive into another week of college football. We got the MAC back. We got the Pac-12 back. Big Ten keeps on trucking. Big games in the ACC this weekend. A lot to talk about in college football. But before we get to that, I do want to make a couple of quick announcements off the top of the show. First and foremost, I want to quickly tell a story about a guy who has been very instrumental in my career, and I hope you guys enjoy this story. So when I was getting started in this business back when I was, 19 years old, sophomore in college, started my own blog, did it as a project for a class in media writing class, I think it was, and I was blogging, I was tweeting, I was learning all about the internet and how to write and what the heck to say, what not to say, probably more importantly. And one of the assignments for the class that I was in was to interview somebody in your field, whatever field you wanted, whether it was sports, weather, news, whatever, and interview that person and basically post the Q&A as a blog post for credit. And most people went out and they found somebody on the local beat, whether it was a local news station, maybe another professor, maybe it was, could be a local radio host, whatever. And nothing wrong with that at all, but I thought to myself, why not try to go all the way to the top? Why not try to talk to someone who is at the very top of the profession, who has mastered the craft and can impart some of that wisdom on me? Which led me to Ivan Maisel. Now, Ivan Maisel has written and covered college football for decades. He did it for Sports Illustrated for quite some time. He's been with ESPN since 2002, I believe, and just a remarkable writer, great storyteller. At the time, he was actually hosting the ESPN's college football podcast with Beano Cook, which, to my knowledge, might be the first college football podcast ever. I mean, it was so early in its infancy, just the entire world of podcasting, and Ivan and Beano put together a must-listen for any college football fan, and there have been some really good ones that have been around for a long time. The Solid Verbal was around the same time. Those guys are still going strong, but Ivan and Beano, that was the gold standard to me. So I reached out to Ivan about this podcast, or rather this project, and I never expected to hear back from him. I figured I'd send an email that, you know what, I shot my shot. At least I can say I tried. And I remember walking out of the class. This was an 8 a.m. class, so it was basically 9 in the morning. Sent this email before I packed up my laptop and headed back to my dorm room. And by the time I got back to my dorm room 10 minutes later, I already had a response from Ivan saying, happy to talk to you, when's a good time? And that blew me away, absolutely blew me away, that at the time, I think this rock star, superstar writer, voice of college football, Ivan Maisel, probably has a million other things better to do with his time than talk to this 19-year-old kid from Virginia Tech who just wants to talk to him for a class project. And basically, he immediately responded to me and said he was happy to talk. And I've never forgotten that. I've always cherished and valued that memory. I ended up talking to Ivan for probably close to 45 minutes when I asked for 15 on this project. We talked about the business. We talked about his career, his path. And then we just talked college football. I don't remember what it was about now. Gosh, it was 2009. We were probably talking about if Tim Tebow could lead the Gators to a third national championship in 4 years. Whatever it was, Ivan was so gracious with his time. And it saddened me to see just minutes before we started taping the podcast that Ivan Maisel is being let go at ESPN. His contract will not be renewed when it ends, in January, according to him on his Twitter page. And you may or may not know Ivan very well. He's such an incredible voice. You probably watched something on television that's had Ivan's fingerprints on it, even if you didn't know it. But if you haven't read Ivan Maisel in the past, or if you haven't listened to Ivan much, or if at all, it's your loss. And I would highly recommend going to find Ivan's work. It's fantastic. I've read much of his writing, including several books. He's phenomenal and an incredible person. Tragic story several years ago of his son's sudden passing. And Ivan has been a great voice for mental health since then as well. So just as great of a writer as he is, as talented of a professional as he is, he's an even better person. And it just struck me hearing that news that he was being let go from ESPN today, because I don't know that I would be here with a college football podcast of my own if it weren't for Ivan helping inspire me, you know, 11 years ago. So shout out to Ivan Maisel. This is not the end of the journey for him, no question. I cannot wait to see where he lands next. I would love to have him on this podcast to tell stories better than any that I could tell about college football. But we'll raise one to Ivan today, because he's one of the best to ever do it. Also, before we get started, I do want to quickly address the news for me, personal news this week, which is that as of last Thursday, I am no longer with WFNZ on the radio in Charlotte. And that was a very difficult decision for me. It was not easy. I've always worked in sports media ever since I was a sophomore in college talking to Ivan. But ever since I've been out of school, I've either worked at ESPN or I worked at Fox, and then most recently with FNZ. And for the first time in my life, I will not be working in sports media full time. I've found a job in a different career, and I'm going to pursue that. I'm very excited about that. That doesn't mean this podcast is going anywhere. Quite frankly, it means good things for the podcast. I'm going to be able to spend more time and energy focusing on college football country, which I'm thrilled about. This podcast really took off several years ago when I launched it in 2018, and with everything else going on, all good things, whether it was, you know, obligations on the radio or television or doing work with SiriusXM, which I'll still hopefully continue to do, I haven't had the amount of time that I want to be able to devote to this podcast. But now moving forward, this becomes a much bigger priority for me. Just in terms of, you know, producing content. So I can't wait for the future. We got some very special, cool announcements coming up for you in the next very short while on next steps for this podcast and how it's going to grow. But the best thing you guys can do is to spread the word and tell your friends about the pod, share it on social media, leave a rating and a review. That helps us in the rankings, helps us show up on people's feeds. And we want this to be the best college football podcast there is. I mean, I remember listening 12 years ago in my dorm room, 19 years old, thinking I couldn't wait until the next episode with Ivan and Bino would drop. That's what we want this podcast to be. We are informative. We're fun. We're authentic. And we think that we can, with your help, become one of the best, if not the best, college football podcast in the country. But we need your guys' help to do it. So I'm no longer with WFNZ. There's another story for another time, I'm sure, on how that came to be. But in the meantime, all roads lead to the College Football Country podcast right now. Full steam ahead. Can't wait to get it started. We got a huge week this week. We got Notre Dame Clemson. We got Michigan trying to bounce back. We got LSU in a disaster, in panic mode down there in Baton Rouge. We have got all kinds of college football content coming your way. So let's get right into it. Stay tuned. This is the College Football Country Podcast.
Tonight, hey, it was BYOG, bring your own guts.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Caught, racing, touchdown, Nittany Lions. We've got a ball game in Necktown.
But, sweetheart, this pick is strictly business.
Hello, Heisman.
Well, Ross, here we are, week one of the college football season, 2020. The Pac-12 is back. It's the What is this, like the sixth week one we've had?
Pac-12. Hold on. College football has officially started now that Maction is back.
Well,
we have the first.
Yeah, you're right. But that already happened. I'm looking forward now. We should have recorded one. We missed the boat. We missed the boat not doing a full-blown Mac preview on Tuesday night. That was on us.
That is on us. That's schedules and what have you. Certainly should have done that. But it seems like it was a pretty exciting night of Maction. It was great to switch over to that, you know, watching election coverage and all that, just getting frustrated and stressed and all of the above, and then just turn on a little Maction and watch some fumbles and some missed kicks and that guy running 30 yards down the field. And it's just a beautiful thing.
It was an absolutely beautiful thing. And the most beautiful of all was fading Scott Leffler, which I think I'm going to do every single week all season long. I don't know if you saw my tweet about this. But
I did. You called your shot.
Any chance I get to bet against a Scott Leffler coached football team, I'm going to take it. I just want to run you through something really quickly. All right. Have you seen any of the stats from Bowling Green the other night?
I have not.
Okay. So they were 24-point dogs in this game, and I hammered Toledo. Toledo wins 38-3. So shout out to Scott Leffler. Can't score a touchdown. In a season where nobody can tackle, defense is completely optional. Bowling Green doesn't score a touchdown in the season opener. Here is their quarterback stat line for the game, Ross. 8 of 30 for 128 yards, no touchdowns, two picks. 4.4 QBR.
Ugh.
That is Scott Leffler for you.
Yeah, the Scott Leffler experience.
Man, unbelievable. So Bowling Green... Mm. Bowling Green 38-3. We will be fading Scott Leffler and the Bowling Green Falcons as many chances as we can get this season. Thank you, Scott Leffler.
The gift that keeps on giving.
So good.
Yeah. But you're right, though. This weekend, in all seriousness, with the Pac-12 coming back, it'll be fun. Like a couple of pretty good games. I mean, no idea how good anybody's going to be yet, because just like everybody else in the country, we're getting to see them for the first time, and they're probably not going to be tackling very well, and going to be all kinds of funny business going on, but it's going to be just each week. It seems like the slate of games feels more normal in a year where nothing feels normal. So that'll be good.
Yeah. I mean, we pretty much have at this point, every league is playing. I mean, with the Pac-12 back, Mountain West back, you've got, every major league I believe is back at this point. And, you know, obviously there's some games that are being canceled. Cal and Washington was canceled, which kind of bizarre there. Only one positive test that I saw from Cal. But either way, that game canceled. Wisconsin-Purdue. Poor Wisconsin, man. I mean, the Badgers get off to this rip-roaring start a few weeks ago. And now it's like, I don't even know if they're going to play again. And it's what's fascinating is what if – you know, because we're going to talk about Clemson and Notre Dame coming up. Obviously, that's the game of the weekend, Georgia, Florida, too. But what if you get like a, I guess at this point it would be a 6-0 or like a 7-0 Wisconsin team at the end of the year that won the Big Ten versus a 10-1 or 11-1 Clemson, you know, that maybe or 11-1 Notre Dame that loses in the ACC championship. Does a 7-0 Wisconsin get into? I guess they do, right? I mean, I guess they get into the playoff. It's just gonna be so absurd.
Yeah, it is gonna be absurd. No, it's poor Wisconsin is right, because they looked like they were gonna be a ton of fun to watch. But we'll see, man. I think first things first. When you talk about, you know, an 11-1 Clemson, we gotta get Clemson to that point now, and they almost slipped up this past weekend.
They did. So they fall behind 28-13 at halftime. Everybody's freaking out. Everybody says, oh, number one could go down. You had Joe Tessitore's kid running fake field goals late in the first half, which was a cool moment, first of all, but also just weird. I mean, I'm watching the game, and I mean, I don't know if – I'm sure you've seen the clip by now, even if you weren't watching live, but like, I don't know how I feel about the way Tess called that play. Like, it almost felt like he was too professional about it. I mean, people were making the jokes on Twitter, like, oh, if it was my kid, you'd have to pull me out of the booth. Like, I would have gone nuts or whatever. I wouldn't have been, I would have redefined what the word professional or unprofessional means. And I mean, I'm not saying you have to go like complete LeVar Ball, but it would have been nice if Tess had been a little more human about it. He just was straight up like, Tessitore makes the play. Like, what a play by the freshman. But I'm like, okay, like, you can acknowledge it's your son. It is your blood. It's okay.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I think if anything, we have appreciated as a society, like, people just being like very honest and transparent about that stuff. Now, obviously you don't want people just like blatantly rooting in the press box, but like, I think we all would have been cool with a little bit of emotion there. I agree with that.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, there's not a lot of precedent for that, so I understand him trying to err hard on the side of professionalism, but I'm with you. Such a cool moment. It probably could have even been cooler if he would have, you know, played it up a little bit.
Yeah, just a teeny bit. Like I said, you know, I don't need you to go crazy. Yeah. I don't need you, you know.
Put a little mustard on that hot dog.
Yeah, that's all right, Tess. But either way, it wasn't enough for Boston College. Clemson gets this win. But this is what I got to ask you. In watching that game, did you feel at any point like Clemson could lose?
Briefly. But once the second half started, I knew it would turn pretty quickly. But there was definitely a moment, I guess it was when Etienne fumbled at the goal line.
Right.
And Boston College returned it all the way for a touchdown. I don't remember what that made the score, but that was the first time I was like, whoa, something might actually be happening here. But then once it didn't really get any worse than that and Clemson kind of steadied the ship, I knew that they were going to come back and win.
Yeah, I really never had a doubt. And I guess that's easy to say now that they won, but it just felt to me, you talk about that fumble return. If it's not, that's a 14-point swing. They fumble on the one-yard line. If it's not for that, that game's 14-13 at halftime. Not a great game for Clemson. You're not impressed by that, but if it's 14-13 going into the half, you're not really thinking, all right, Clemson's going to lose the game. All right, they're in a fight right now, but they're not going to lose the game. I never really was worried. It was pretty fluky. It felt like Boston College kind of had everything that could possibly go right for them for a half. And, I mean, credit to Halfley, credit to BC. I mean, they're way better than I thought they would be. I think they're way better than anybody thought they would be. I mean, this team won on a field goal in the last minute against Texas State in the season opener, and now they're, you know, taking North Carolina to the wire, taking Clemson to the wire. I mean, that's it's a hell of a job Jeff Halfley's doing. I don't know how long he's going to be at BC. What did you make of DJ Uiagalelei? What'd you make of that performance? Because he was 342 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. The stats were incredible, and a rushing touchdown.
Yeah, really impressive rushing touchdown. I'm actually surprised he didn't end up with more rushing yards than he ended up with, because I feel like he had one like pretty long touchdown on a fourth down. He was pretty much what I thought he was going to be. Big, strong, impressive looking dude, huge arm, and a couple throws that were just a little erratic. Like, I think you're used to watching Trevor Lawrence, if you're a Clemson fan, just like not miss throws, certainly not miss them by much. So seeing this dude just miss a couple, maybe because he put too much on it or whatever, like just not be quite as crisp. But man, you saw a giant ball of clay that could be molded into an all-world quarterback. Dude has every tool in the world. He was about what I thought he was going to be.
You know, Greg McElroy was on the call for the game, and Greg, he's brought this up a few times now with DJ, but he's right that he reminds me of Jamarcus Russell. Like, there is that, like, I mean, obviously when people hear that, they're going to freak out and think of the bust in the NFL. The guy wasn't a bust because of physical reasons. The guy was a bust because he drank himself out of the league. But DJ Uiagalelei, I mean, he's got that just enormous frame. Jamarcus was probably a little bit bigger, which is wild. But I mean, 6'5", 250 pounds, and just so effortless with the way he throws. I mean, everybody's pointed this out by now, but he was not the reason that game was close. I mean, he missed a couple of throws. They had to punt a couple of times. Maybe Trevor Lawrence, the game's a little bit more comfortable if Trevor's in the game. But if they were to have lost, you do not point back at DJ, DJU's performance and blame him for that game. especially when you think about the fact that guy got zero reps, you would have think, or very few, with the starters before taking the field on Saturday. Because most of by the time you get to Thursday, Friday, you're going through walkthroughs and like situational stuff in practice. You didn't find out Lawrence wasn't playing until Thursday. So even earlier in the week, Lawrence was you undoubtedly on the field practicing with the ones. For DJ to step in like that, that's not an easy thing to do. No matter how gifted you are, that's a hard task to step in and, you know, play with those guys that you don't have a lot of reps with.
Absolutely it is. And I think you would expect then this weekend he will just be that much more comfortable.
Right.
Like getting those kind of live reps. And especially, like, you really can't emphasize enough how important it is to get a little bit of game pressure on you. Like, it's one thing if he came in and, you know, over the course of the first however many games, threw 40 passes all in garbage time. But, like, he had to manage a game where it looked for a little bit like they were going to lose, and he had to deal with the pressure that comes with that. So, like, that's incredible experience for him. It served him very well this weekend when they've got an even bigger test against Notre Dame.
So how are you feeling about this? We'll pick it later, but how concerned should Clemson be going off of what we saw last week?
Yeah, I mean, look, obviously you would prefer to have Trevor Lawrence back there. It's the understatement of the century. I think it goes from a game you feel really good about winning to a game you feel like you still should win, but it's certainly more up in the air now. And it's not just because of DJ or because of Lawrence being out. I mean, they've got some other guys out as well. So concerned, like, yeah, I guess a little bit. I guess your spidey senses are up some. Like, I think you know you're walking into a much tougher game now, but one you probably still feel like you should win.
So I'm going to pick it later, but I want to make one point now about this game that I think is very critical to remember. Clemson does not need to win at all. Point blank. They don't need to win. This game means nothing to them. If Clemson loses, they didn't have Trevor, so you already automatically have a caveat that the committee will take into account. I mean, Heather Dinich has talked about this all week long. She, I mean, she knows the committee inside and out. They will not take this loss into consideration. Presuming, I mean, if they get blown away, I mean, it, you know, this is different. But assuming that Clemson is moderately competitive in this game and they lose, they're going to factor in the fact that Trevor Lawrence wasn't on the field. So there's that. Not to mention the fact that, in all likelihood, Clemson's going to play Notre Dame again. They play Notre Dame again. Assuming Notre Dame wins this game, Notre Dame makes the ACC championship, they'll play Clemson. Clemson would have the one loss. And Clemson avenges that loss, presumably with Trevor Lawrence. There's no doubt in my mind Clemson's in the playoff. Now, does it – we've talked in the last few episodes about – you know, what if there is a, do you want to be number two? Do you want to be number three? Or, you know, obviously you want to be number one. This would take being number one, not necessarily out of the equation, but would make it a lot harder. That's important. But just in terms of making the playoff, this game doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't. I mean, it means so much more to Notre Dame than it does to Clemson. A win here for Notre Dame would go a long way for perception of the program, but also for, you know, their chances of making the playoff. ESPN has Clemson as a 86% chance to make the playoff if they win, 48% if they lose. I think 48% is too low. I really do. I think if Clemson loses and wins out, they're gonna get in. So,
yeah,
I just really don't know how this loss is gonna impact unless they get killed. If they get absolutely killed in this game to the point where, well, even if Lawrence is in, they wouldn't have made up a 28-point difference. Fine, but I don't think anybody sees Notre Dame going out there and taking, you know, Clemson behind the woodshed.
No, I certainly don't think that'll happen. Yeah, it's a good point. It certainly means more for Notre Dame. One, because Notre Dame, and you're right, Clemson, even if they end up with just the one loss, like, they're going to make the ACC championship. This is really the only trip-up game potentially they have, because you got to assume Trevor's coming back. But Notre Dame, they still have, well, we'll talk about them in a minute. They still have North Carolina later. Other than that, their schedule is pretty clear. But you got to think that this would pretty much guarantee them a spot in the ACC championship game. Whereas if they lose, it gets pretty dicey between, you know, them, Miami, and maybe a couple other teams.
For sure. For sure. It means a lot more to Notre Dame. We'll pick it coming up in a couple minutes, but now let's talk about Carolina. You mentioned them. 44-41 last week. Virginia, a game that we both agreed the line absolutely stunk. This was the stinkiest line of the week. This is now 2 weeks in a row, Ross, where the stinky line has proven to be true. And
that's right.
We had Indiana, Penn State. Indiana wins that game, and then Virginia hangs on by the skin of their teeth last week against Carolina. And I will cede the floor to you. You are the resident Tar Heel expert before I give my thoughts. So I think you and I are on the same page on some of this. But as you're watching that game and you watch it end, what's going through the minds of a Carolina fan?
Well, as it's ending, you're very frustrated that they gave up a fake punt when everybody in the world knew that a fake punt was coming.
Including them. They knew it. They were ready.
To be fair, you're right. They knew. I mean, they stopped it, kind of. The guy had to reverse field. If you're looking at it tactically, the frustration the Carolina fans have is why even put the punt team on the field? Because in a game where they're running down your throat, you have a good feeling that a fake punt is coming because they have their running quarterback as the up back. You have Daz Newsome 40 yards downfield, not even in the play. You could have another safety in there to help stop the run.
Yep.
So that's just a tactical error. Like, yeah, then ultimately they over-pursue and miss the tackle, but that's coaches and players messing up. Like, there's no reason to take the defense off the field there. Worst case, they punt and they down it at the one, and you still probably go 99 yards and score because UVA was not stopping them at that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it's very frustrating. I think Carolina fans prior to this year, and we've talked about this some, like I think most people looked at next year as potentially the year. You're going to have Sam Howell in his third year. You bring back your entire offensive line. Some of the reinforcements that Mac has recruited on defense will either be there or will be in their second and third year. So next year was kind of the year, but people just saw the way the schedule potentially played out this year and thought this could be a year where they could make a run. And it's very frustrating to see them lose games that they should not lose. You know, they get up for NC State, they get up for Virginia Tech, and they don't know that it's, they weren't up for these games, but they play these primetime games against FSU and against UVA, and for long stretches in both games, just look bad. Now, I say all that. In both games, they end up like it comes down to a little thing here or there at the end of the game where they probably should have still had a chance to win. Josh, dating back to last year, in Mac Brown era 2.0, North Carolina has 8 losses by a total of 32 points.
Mm-hmm.
And there could have been 2 more of those if not for interceptions at the goal line against Duke last year and Boston College this year.
Right.
But what that tells me is that they are not doing an effective job of coaching. Like when you're regularly losing close games, that's coaching, because it could be time management. It could just be strategic decision here or there. Like the little things that happen during a game that in the chess match are consistently going against North Carolina. So that's concerning. The other thing, the offense is playing well enough to win. Even against Florida State, I mean, they stalled out a couple times and missed some field goals. They had some funky stuff happen there, but they were moving the ball consistently throughout. Against UVA, they put up 41 points. That's enough. That's more than enough points.
Sam Howell was quarterback of the week in the ACC.
He was ridiculous. 400 plus yards, 4 touchdowns. Like, he was outrageous.
Yeah.
We knew the defense would struggle. I thought they would be a little better than this, and they were. They are now down 3 of their 4 starters in the secondary.
Sure.
And it's clear that that is making a difference, both in terms of how the secondary is playing and how you have to scheme the rest of the defense around that. You had Storm Duck and Kyler McMichael were both guys you could kind of put out on an island, at least against most, you know, ACC receivers. Miles Wolfick was your quarterback in the back of the defense and really good against the run. So you're seeing all of that. All of that being said, though, it's special teams that have lost them both of their games. Against Florida State, 2 blocked punts. Against
missed field
Virginia,
goal too, right? A couple of missed field goals.
Missed field goal.
Yeah.
Yep. Against Virginia, you miss another field goal, albeit a long one. You muff a punt that was really significant, because if they just catch that punt, again, like I said, Virginia was showing no signs of actually stopping them at any point. North Carolina probably goes down and scores before the end of the half, go up 3 or 7, probably 7 at halftime. As it turned out, they muff a punt, Virginia goes in and scores, and then North Carolina only has like a minute left. They drive down the field, and then questionable play calling at best at the goal line. They end up throwing a backwards pass that gets booted around. They recover the fumble. The half ends. So they go into the half down 7 instead of up 7. UVA gets the ball to start the second half. They're down 14 before they touch the ball again.
Yeah.
So, and that's all because of a muff punt. And the irony is they put in their backup punt returner, who's their hands guy, Toe Groves. They took Daz Newsome out. They put in their just go in there and catch it guy. He slips and falls, and it hits off his chest. So it's little things, man. I mean, the talent is there. Sam Howell is this, like, generational quarterback for this program. He's going to be an NFL player. He's going to put up, you know, can put up crazy numbers when he needs to. They have all these skilled players in the world, you know, 3 or 4 NFL players at the skill positions. And even with a bad defense, they should still be winning these games, but it's little coaching decisions and special teams miscues that have cost them 2 games already and have almost cost them a couple more. So it's frustrating. I think at this point you are what you are. Like, if it happens in one game, that's like, it's a fluke. Oh, I dropped a punt. That's not going to happen again. Like, when your special teams are consistently this bad, like, North Carolina is not good enough yet, and talent-wise, to overcome bad mistakes in special teams. Like, they at least have to play that to a draw to be winning games, and thus far they haven't done that.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Are they better right now than they were a year ago?
Are they better right now than they were? They're not as good as they were at the end of last year, I don't think. I think when
that seems like a problem. When you return 70% plus of your guys, and I mean, I understand injuries happen, and you take hits here and there, but I mean, last year's secondary was pretty banged up too, and they don't seem to be better. They seem like they're the same team.
They talked about it a lot last year, but we didn't fully appreciate it until now. How impactful Jason Strobridge and Aaron Crawford were.
Definitely.
On last year's team.
Yeah.
Your 2 5th-year senior defensive linemen, they held that team together with duct tape. Because they were playing a lot of snaps. But they were guys that were commanding double teams because every offense knew, like, all right, if we can just stop these guys, like, there's not much else. That's why Chaz Surratt had an all-ACC, all-American kind of year. Because he was just free to run around and make plays because everybody was so worried about them. Now there's tape on Surratt, and they know, like, okay, this dude over-pursues a lot. We can go be pretty physical with him. And he doesn't have all, you know, NFL-caliber defensive linemen in front of him. So that's where they're missing. Now, they have that kind of NFL-caliber talent on the D-line. It's just really young. It's either not on campus yet or they're all freshmen. So there's a big gap where, honestly, their starting defensive line should be NC State's starting defensive line right now. But Fedora had screwed up so badly in recruiting by the end of his tenure that those guys all went to State. The Aleem McNeils, Savion Jackson, Stephen Clark, Josh Harris. Those are all in-state guys that, under the Mack Brown regime, would be in Chapel Hill. And then you'd be looking at a really special team here because – that would kind of solve their one weakness. So, no, it's look, defensively, and Jay Bateman needs to start getting some criticism as well. I'm the biggest Jay Bateman fan in the world, but at some point, man, like, your whole thing is that, you know, you came from Army, you learned how to do more with less and scheme, and, like, UVA can't put up that many points on your defense. I'm sorry, you have to make an adjustment. Like, put everybody in the box and go, you know, zero coverage and make – just do something to stop them from running the ball on you all night.
Yep.
And if they throw a long pass, they throw a long pass. Like, they're going to march down the field and score anyway. I'd rather the defense get the ball or your offense get the ball back sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's as crazy as that sounds. Like, I'd rather do that. Let them throw it deep. make Brennan Armstrong, especially once he got hurt, make those guys beat you throwing the ball down the field. And if they do it, they do it. But boy, it's frustrating to watch him like just let them run the ball down the field on him all night long because they couldn't get the ball back.
It just feels to me like they're the same team they were a year ago. I mean,
yep.
Javonte Williams is playing his butt off. Sam Howell's great again. But like I said last year with this team, they made a lot of mistakes late in games, or not even late in games, because they were actually good in the fourth quarter sometimes. But at the, in the very crunch time moments, there were some glaring errors. But there were moments in these games where they were very clearly poorly coached, whether that was personnel, clock management, you name it. And when the expectation is, hey, this is year one of a rebuild. If we win five or six games, that's great, but it doesn't really matter because we're building for the future. You're not going to take a lot of heat when you make those kind of mistakes. But when the expectation is you should compete for the ACC, you know, championship, right, or a spot in the championship game, or, I mean, and this was, I think, a huge problem for them, is the fact that they got to number five in the country, which was a complete mirage. It's not real.
Yeah.
In a normal year, probably still top 10. But, you know, Penn State, they were ranked ahead of Ohio State when they went to number five.
That's an irregularity thing with people not ranking the Big Ten teams.
It is, right. but my point is that it created a perception that wasn't real. And not every fan is going to pay attention to the degree that you or I will, or that the diehards will. And there's going to be people who see, oh, UNC number five. Most importantly, the players. And if the players start to believe, oh, we're the number five team in America, you really haven't earned that yet. That's been a theme that we've talked about all season long. So they've got the talent there. They should not have lost to Virginia. They should obviously not have lost to Florida State. But they also don't have the kind of talent, particularly on defense, where they can just show up and win. And when you have that number five beside your logo on the scoreboard on Saturday, you tend to think that you can show up and just win against some of these lower, echelon teams in the conference. And it's just not the case yet. And some of that, I think, does fall on, you mentioned Bateman, the coordinator. I mean, you can't really fault Phil Longo, the offense is scoring, but Mack Brown as well.
Yep. And well, look here, I've been overwhelmingly negative about this because it is frustrating and you think they should be playing better. They still control their destiny to make the ACC championship game. They still have games against Notre Dame and Miami at the end of the year. If they can beat Duke and then take care of business against a Wake team that is suddenly just as good as they are.
Pesky.
If not better. I think in Sagarin, actually, they are slightly ahead of North Carolina.
Right? Really? Wow.
Yep.
Woo.
The numbers are pretty favorable for the Demon Deacons right now. The computers like them a lot. The point being, though, like they theoretically could. I don't think anybody expects them to beat Notre Dame and Miami, but they could. It wouldn't shock you if they, you know, came out at home against Notre Dame and pulled off the upset, and then maybe Miami's lost a game or two by then, and, you know, they go beat a downtrodden Miami team. Like, all of their goals this year are still in front of them, but they have to play better.
Well, they have no room for error now.
Really,
none.
Zero room for error.
Right.
Zero. They've lost any wiggle room. But what's, again, I'll go back to what I said at the beginning, then we can move on. They just have to do the little things, like catch punts, stop the obvious. I say that like semi-jokingly, but that's kind of what it is. Like, the offense, when it's rolling, is so good. It is good enough to beat anybody on their schedule. You said it last week, like, it's good enough to where they would have a shot to beat Clemson because there is so much firepower in that offense. And if you can, you know, create a couple turnovers, or if Clemson makes a couple special teams blunders, things like that, they've got the offense to win a game like that.
Yep.
And the defense is not good. I think Bateman, again, needs to switch things up a little bit and stop bend, don't break, and try to go create more turnovers and make big plays and live with it if somebody scores on you, because you're getting the ball back to your offense faster. If they can do some of those things, but if they could just take care of the little things and not give up points on special teams or mess up the clock in situations and take opportunities away from them, burn timeouts in dumb moments. Like, they still could be the third or fourth best team in the conference and still could finish this season 8-3. And that's a really good year.
Yeah.
But you're right. The hype train got so out of control that losing a tight game on the road at night, it like feels so much worse than it probably should have.
Totally.
So we'll see, man. They got to take care of business the next 2 weeks, and then we'll buckle up for a couple huge games down the stretch.
A lot of games still in front of them for Carolina, but obviously a tough look last week. All right, Ross, let's get to our favorite segment. Let's get to DraftKings and CraftKings. All right, I'm going to go first. All right, we're gonna spend some positivity into this podcast right now. Our boy,
yes, we are.
Matt Corral is my draft king of the week from Ole Miss. 31 of 34, 412 yards, 6 touchdowns against Vandy. Now that's a great performance. 6 touchdowns against anybody is great.
Amazing.
But here's the more amazing part. 2 weeks ago, he had 6 interceptions against Arkansas. I have to think, I wonder if someone's looked this stat up. Maybe someone has, and I just haven't seen it. Has anyone ever had a 6-touchdown game and a 6-interception game in the same season? This guy did it 2 weeks apart.
My gut is certainly no, only because I can't imagine there have been that many 6-interception games.
Right.
And I can't imagine anybody who's had that many people who had one of those were even given an opportunity to play enough more football to have a 6-touchdown game.
Man, shout out to Lane Kiffin. So, long leash.
Yeah, he's stuck with his guy. Man, Matt Corral is a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah.
As we've talked about on here before, my brother-in-law is an Ole Miss grad, big fan. And so I've watched actually a couple games with him this year. And I was convinced that Matt Corral had to be like a Major League Baseball prospect or something like that. If you just watch the dude play quarterbacks, watch him move around, he just like seems like that guy that you always hear. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, he was a second round draft pick.
Yeah.
By the Colorado Rockies. Turns out no real baseball background that I can find. Just a great athlete. But just the way he kind of throws some sidearm stuff, and he's a great slide. Like one of the best slides in the game. But just a phenomenal athlete. Yeah, that was an awesome game. They sure took it to Vandy.
Yeah, and I love that Lane Kiffin will stick with you. You got to think, I'm playing, like, in Matt Corral's head, I'm playing Vandy. I've already thrown 6 picks in a game, and my coach didn't pull me. So, I mean, it's the ultimate, like, F it, I'm going deep mentality. Like, I can do whatever
right?
I want. And he went out there and slung it against the Commodores. I mean, 412 yards. I mean, Vanderbilt's a whole other issue, man. But I love watching Ole Miss, too. That's a fun team. I mean, I think they kind of
put
themselves on the map a little bit when they took Alabama, not quite to the wire, but, I mean, stuck around for 3.5 quarters with the Tide. And Lane is Lane. So Matt Corral has been a ton of fun.
He is. Love that pick. So mine, we're going back to a favorite here on College Football Country, friend of the program, Bo Nix from Auburn. Natty Bo had 300 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. For good measure, added another 81 yards and 1 touchdown on the ground. Really good 40-plus fantasy point day, so a huge Draft King day. But mostly, I'm going to keep picking Bo Nix for something every week until the internet fully apologizes for how mean they were to Bo Nix a few weeks ago. The guy had a bad game or two, and people jumped on him too much. So I am officially here to defend Bo Nix. I will fight tooth and nail to defend his honor. And when he puts up almost 400 yards of total offense with 4 touchdowns, I'm going to be the first one to sing his praises. So shout out, Bo Nix. You are my draft king of the week.
Well, this is going to be the most Auburn season of all time because Bo Nix, like you said, struggled early on. Was horrible against Georgia. They get blown away. They then lose the real embarrassing loss. There's no shame in losing to Georgia, even the way the Auburn lost. All right, it happens. But they lose to South Carolina, and all of a sudden it feels like this season could spiral. And yet here they are. They beat Ole Miss. That's a decent enough win. Ole Miss record isn't great, but Ole Miss, they've lost to some great teams. Then they blow LSU away. And again, we could talk about Coach Orgeron. Maybe we'll save that for another week. There'll be more bad Coach O days in the future.
Yeah.
But they're now sitting here. They're 4-2. They got Mississippi State in 2 weeks. So they're off this Saturday, but they got Mississippi State. That should be 5-2. They get Tennessee after that. Not a lock, but it's, you know, the key's in the door. So that's 6-2. Then it's Alabama in the Iron Bowl, which you would imagine is probably a loss, but, you know, 6-3. And then they get Texas A&M. That Texas A&M game could be sneaky huge. And I'll share some thoughts on A&M coming up in just a little bit. They're going to be in by the boat. But A&M might have a lot on the line in that game. And if Auburn can win 7-3 with a win over Texas A&M, it's a hell of a season. After, you know, yet again, Gus Malzahn, it seems like every time we get to the point where it feels like it's about to turn for him for the worse, he just saves it at the last moment every single time. And I mean, this is just another example of that. But he needs Bo Nix to keep playing well. I'm actually going to go now. We're going to do our Craft Kings of the Week, the guys that we think are going to have big weeks, and we're drinking it to their success. Zach Wilson, Zachtoberfest. All right, so this
is a little Zachtoberfest.
Yeah. There's an Old Mech Oktoberfest beer here in Charlotte. So I'm going to drink some Zachtoberfest on Friday night. Got to get it in early. These are some Friday night brews.
Yeah.
Because we got sneaky one of the better games of the year in BYU Boise State. Friday night kickoff is 9:45. FS1. So we're going to get it on FS1 on Friday night. BYU undefeated. This game was added to their schedule. A lot of people around BYU hoping that a win here would be enough to put them in the mix for the college football playoff. I don't think that's the case. But, dude, have you watched Zach Wilson play? Honestly, like, have you watched much of this kid?
No, not at all.
He is awesome. Like, the numbers obviously stand out. You can look at the numbers and say, wow, all right, 75%, 310 yards a game, 19 touchdowns, 2 picks, 7 rushing touchdowns. He looks like he's a small jitterbug, like kind of like almost like what you were talking about with Corral, like kind of weird arm angles, throws the ball kind of from all different positions.
Is Mackenzie Milton a good comparison?
He's a better thrower. He's a much better thrower than Mackenzie Milton.
But you're saying he's Johnny Football.
It's funny you say that. Yes. That's he to me is he's better than Manziel was, better as a like arm talent. Because Johnny was escape, make like miraculous plays, turn nothing into something. And he had Mike Evans in college. So, you know, I think it made him look a little bit better than he really was. Zach Wilson doesn't have Mike Evans. he's playing at BYU. Now, he's not playing great competition, but he's at BYU. He is insane, and I even saw this week Pro Football Focus had their mock draft this week. They had him going number 3 to Jacksonville in their mock draft. This guy has skyrocketed into legit. But what I was going to say is, so he looks like a little guy. He looks like a Manziel type. He's 6'3". Like, he's a big dude. He moves around like one of those smaller, more, you know, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson types. He's 6'3". I mean, everybody wants to compare, you know, to Mahomes and stuff. You can see that same, like, type of play in him. Watch this game. Watch this game Friday night. It's a huge game. There's a lot on the line, BYU-Boise State, because of, you know, New Year's Six Bowls implication. Possibly playoff, although I don't think it's going to happen. But just to watch Zach Wilson, you're going to get Jack Sears, who used to play for USC. He's the quarterback for Boise State. Some weird stuff going on with their starter, but Sears is a great backup. So they've got... great quarterback battle in this game. And some bad blood, Ross. I read this week, didn't realize. Zach Wilson was a Boise State commit until the week before signing day. This kid flipped from Boise to BYU. It might be some, and apparently I read this story is great. It's in like the Deseret News out in Utah about how pissed off all the Boise coaches were at Wilson's high school coach when he flipped, and apparently just like bombarded this guy, like trying to get him to convince the Wilson to go back to Boise. He didn't do it. He's at BYU, and they might take it out on him on Friday night.
I love it, dude. Great research there. Yeah. I obviously I'm familiar with the kind of season he's having, but I really haven't actually watched.
He's fun.
Any of it. He sort of looks like a mix between Jimmy Clausen and like Christian McCaffrey. He's a big headband guy. Just for whatever that's worth. Just put that in the back of your mind.
Honestly, he kind of plays like a cross between Jimmy Clausen and the college Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah. Wait, doesn't McCaffrey have a brother that plays quarterback?
He has two. He has Dylan, who was at Michigan and transferred. I actually don't even know if Dylan has ended up anywhere yet. And then Luke is at Nebraska.
So can we be sure that this isn't a third McCaffrey brother?
Ooh,
is what I'm saying. I don't know. Ed McCaffrey traveled around a lot for a lot of years.
It's true.
I'm sure Zach Wilson comes from a lovely family, but I just don't know that we can be totally positive about that.
We might have to get on the case.
That's all I'm saying. Love that pick. So I also went with a local beer favorite for mine. We're this weekend though going to be drinking some Diami Legend Brown Ale, the grandfather of the Richmond craft beer scene. So Diami, huge game against UVA in the aforementioned loss. We don't have to talk any more about that, but 11 catches, 240 yards, 3 touchdowns. Second year in a row, he's gone over 200 yards and 3 touchdowns against UVA. Crazy. Just torches those guys. Duke, passing defense, not very good. And Mark Gilbert, their top cornerback, opted out. So they have a good defensive line, really good pass rush, actually. North Carolina, though, it's going to be a similar kind of game, I think, to what they had this past weekend, like eerily similar, other than being, a rivalry game and at home. They're going to have to air the ball out. I think Diami Brown's going to have another huge game and cement himself as a legend in the record books at UNC. So, Diami, legend, Brown Ale.
How many drops are you going to have?
Hey, he didn't have any this weekend. That's the thing. They got a great Diami Brown game and wasted it. But yes, statistically, he's due for a drop or two.
He either makes ridiculous one-handed, like falling out of bound catches, or just drops a 3-yard button hook on 3rd and 2. But yep, I love Diami Brown, man. He's getting some NFL love too.
Yeah, he's a baller. I mean, he's a legit deep threat. He's a really, really explosive receiver. So hopefully, he has another big weekend.
There we go. All right, let's move on by the boat. Week one season starts now. We've got last week 1-2 for me. I actually didn't check your teaser. How did your teaser do? Do we remember?
I'm pretty sure we lost because I think I had North Carolina in there.
Oh, that's right. How could we forget? You said I forgot to pull the audio of you saying North Carolina.
Okay, don't worry about that.
No, you said North Carolina is not losing this game. Put them in the teaser. God, it's your fault. Now, we spent 20 minutes talking about what's wrong with Carolina. You blood bank guaranteeing Carolina a win.
I took Emeka Okafor. He's not bad.
Whoa, man, that's a real problem. All right. So anyway, I didn't have a great week either. Went 1-2. Shout out to Arkansas for covering. I told you on the pod last week they were going to cover. I didn't make it a pick. And lo and behold, with 30 seconds left, Arkansas punched it in to cover the 12, losing by 11.
Look at Arkansas.
Yeah, woo pig. But also, Georgia Tech, man, I was on the right side on Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, too, which I think you were on the Yellow Jackets, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
In that one.
I was.
You got it. I think I was on the right side. Notre Dame won the final, I believe, was 31-13.
Now, wait a minute.
Hold on. Okay. Georgia Tech had a scoop and score touchdown in the first half when Notre Dame was in the red zone. Not all that different from the Clemson BC situation. Not right on the goal line, but in the red zone. Scoop and score, 80-yard touchdown. And then scored with 5 minutes left when Notre Dame had the backups in. Notre Dame's they scored 0 points offensively against Notre Dame's starting defense and still covered that spread. I was on the right side.
No, that's a good point. That is. Did Vegas or whoever you used for your bet, did you make that case with them? Or
Stop the count. They're going to get back to me. Yeah. Stop counting the points. No more points. you're filling the points.
No, you're right. That was a classic gambling game where your logic and how the game actually went, you were spot on about, but the number ended up falling on my side.
That's all right.
You're right about
that. You got me again. All right, let's move on to this week quickly here. We'll be fairly brief in the picks this week, but Arizona State, USC. Yep. I wanted to throw a Pac-12 game in here. So we got a noon Pac-12 kickoff. That's going to be a thing this year. So 9 a.m. local time out in the Coliseum. USC 10.5-point favorites. Over under 57.5. All right, bear with me here, Ross. You ready for this? Herm Edwards.
Yep.
Herm Edwards is basically black Mac Brown. He is black brown. I don't know if I can use that one ever again, but I had to throw it out there once. Because
it's a good thing you're a full-time podcaster now, so you don't have bosses that are going to get upset with you.
I can't throw that one out there on the radio, but Herm Edwards.
He really is. No, you're right about that. He's just like awesome in the living room. He's just all about growing young men and didn't do a lick of football coaching.
It's like that's his whole role. He's like, come in. Yeah. I mean, Herm's experience was in the NFL. Mac has a national championship. Sell the crap out of that. And the Arizona State's recruiting really well right now. They're out-recruiting most of the teams in the Pac-12. Their team this year is pretty good. I actually like Arizona State with the points this week. My pick for the game, my official pick, is the over. I think USC's offense is going to score a ton of points. Keaton Slovis, second year with Graham Harrell. They were rolling last year when he got in and was the full-time guy. USC's new defensive coordinator is Todd Orlando, who was fired at Texas for giving up like 100 points a game. So I don't know what Clay Helton was thinking with that hire. So I don't think USC's defense is going to be very good. And Jaden Daniels, this is another kid you should watch. Watch this game on Saturday. Jaden Daniels, you remember, obviously, we were in school when Tyrod was at Virginia Tech. Jaden Daniels reminds me a lot of Tyrod Taylor. Just kind of diminutive guy. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Isn't going to blow you away with like his arm. He's not going to make these like ridiculous throws or anything. But really good athlete, perfect college quarterback. And he benefited a lot last year from Brandon Ayuk, who's now doing good things with the 49ers. But even without him, I think that they're going to keep it moving. And I'll take the over. I think there'll be plenty of points. If you really wanted to, I'd take Arizona State too. It feels like a lot of points in this game. To the point where Joel Klatt was on Colin Cowherd this week, and Joel's calling the game. And even Joel was doing everything he could within himself not to just flat out tell you to take the points with Arizona State because it just feels like it's that big of a line. Liberty, Virginia Tech, Ross, what do you think about this? Can Virginia Tech pull off the upset at home against the ranked Liberty Flames?
So, 14.5-point favorites, Virginia Tech, as expected. But I assume the answer to this is yes. Is this the largest line ever between a non-ranked team over a ranked team?
Boy, I'm gonna have to text the Bear. That's because it's got to be up there, even if it's not number one. I mean, there's no way there's been lines much bigger than this.
Yeah, so more than a 2-touchdown favorite against a ranked Liberty team. Yeah, man. I mean, Liberty's solid. They beat Syracuse by a couple touchdowns. That was kind of their big like Power Five win. Syracuse is horrible. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think we're on the same page here where it feels like there's going to be a lot of points in this game also.
Liberty is not that good. I'm just going to flat out tell you right now. That is the most paper thin ranking I've ever seen in my life. Offensively, they're good. Malik Willis is a really dynamic player, former Auburn recruit. We talked about that last week, and he's fine. They'll score, but their defense isn't great. And if you look at some of the games early, you know, they beat Western Kentucky by 6. Western Kentucky is 2-5 this season with wins over Middle Tennessee State, who might be the worst team in the FBS, and Chattanooga. Both of those games were 3-point wins. Liberty barely beat them. They beat Florida International, FIU. They beat FIU by 2. FIU is 0-3 this season with a loss to Middle Tennessee State, and they lost by 9 to Jacksonville State. And Liberty beat them by 2. They beat North Alabama. They blew out Louisiana Monroe. That's cool. They beat Syracuse. Big game. Get up for that. I get it. But we know Syracuse stinks. And then last week they beat Southern Miss. Or 2 weeks ago they beat Southern Miss in a game where we already mentioned on last week's pod the interim coach quit after the game. So I'm not exactly sure how stable the Southern Miss program is these days. I'm scared to death of the line because of the hook. That half point makes me nervous. Otherwise, I would be tempted to take Virginia Tech. I'm going to take the over. I don't think Virginia Tech's defense is that good. They gave up 80-plus yard touchdowns last week. Obviously, that's not going to happen again. It's the first time that happened in 35 years. But Tech gives up too many explosive plays. And the one thing that makes me nervous here is that Hugh Freeze, kind of an upset specialist. Like that's what he did when he was at Ole Miss. Even a couple weeks ago, granted, they were favored against Syracuse, but a game against a Power 5, they went in and they won easily. So Hugh Freeze knows how to coach teams in spots like this. So I'm going to stay away from the line because it scares me too much, but I think that they'll score. I just don't think Liberty can stop Virginia Tech at all. I mean, that offensive line, that running game, if Virginia Tech, I mean, they only threw it 10 times last week. Hooker was 10 for 10. Virginia Tech's identity is run the bejesus out of the ball and go home. They'll do that against Liberty. So give me over 67.5. What do you think?
I agree with that pick for sure.
Yeah.
You'll appreciate this. So as you know, I have some family in Lynchburg.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, hilarious that Hugh Freeze lives in Lynchburg, Virginia. If you know anything about Lynchburg, Virginia, and you know anything about Hugh Freeze, it's just a really, really funny mix. Very, very funny fit. So he belongs to the same country club in Lynchburg as my wife's grandparents and some family around there. And apparently ever since Hugh Freeze has started playing there, all of the members have started gambling a lot more on their actual games and or on their golf rounds.
Oh, okay.
And they trace it to Hugh Freeze, that he has just started this ring of really high stakes golf.
Wow.
At this quaint country club in Lynchburg. It's him and his buddies are all down there. It used to be guys who play a couple bucks a hole, but now it's Hugh Freeze came in and guys are playing hundreds of bucks a hole.
That's amazing.
Really quiet. That's country club. They really in all seriousness, they it's all kind of Hugh Freeze and his buddies.
Jeez.
So it's I said, it's just the funniest fit if you know anything about that city. So all that is to say, I agree. Points, 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 points.
Yeah.
Hugh Freeze, as we know, likes it when there's some high stakes here. So I'm with you on that.
They're going to fill it up. All right. The other big one this weekend we haven't touched on yet at all in the pod, Florida-Georgia, 3:30 kick. Georgia's a 3.5-point favorite. Over-under is 52.5. Dan Mullen, last time he beat Kirby Smart, Kirby was coaching the cornerbacks at Alabama in 2008. Yeah. It's been a while. Ross, I'm going to tell you right now, straight up, I'll let you have the floor. Florida's going to win the game.
Okay. So I'm worried that you're right. We are a bulldog positive podcast.
Yeah, we love the dogs.
As anybody knows.
I'm marrying into the family.
If you know anything about us, you know that we're pro bulldog. I'm worried. It kind of feels that way. It feels as though this is the year that Florida gets them. That said, I don't think I'm going to bet on it, but if I were, and I didn't do this yet, but it's not too late, I'm going to add it, Florida from +3.5 to +10.5 is the teaser lock of the week.
Ooh, okay. I like that.
Certainly if Georgia wins, which I think they've got a real chance to, they're not going to score enough to win this game by double figures against this Florida offense. So, sadly, I'm kind of with you. I still think it's going to be really good, really close game, but I don't think there's a chance that Georgia could win by more than 10. So just put that in the back of your, in your back pocket. It could be a really good teaser edition.
For that reason, I'm tempted to go under as well. 52.5. I think, look, Georgia's defense, if you take away what Alabama did to them, Georgia's defense is electric. Some injuries on defense though. Richard LeCount, big safety. He's out for this game. Thankfully he's doing well, but motorcycle accident is going to keep him sidelined. That's huge against Kyle Pitts in Florida, right? So not having your top safety against the best tight end in America, that's a huge advantage now for Florida in this game. I think that Georgia's defense, they're not going to let Florida put up 40 on them. I don't think. I could see Florida getting 28-30. I could see this being a 31-17 kind of game and hitting the under. I'm not touching it. I'm tempted to go under, but the pick is Florida 3.5. I do not have a ton of faith that Stetson Bennett can go blow for blow with Florida. He couldn't do it against Alabama. Florida's offense is not as good as Alabama's is, but I still have a hard time believing after watching. Look, maybe they were looking ahead to some extent last week in the Kentucky game, but they were just so lifeless on offense against the Wildcats. And Bennett had two picks. He was a mess. I was in on the mailman earlier in the year. I thought, hey, this guy can, you know, he can kind of he can just kind of massage the game, do enough, yeah, and you know, not lose it for him. I kind of think Stetson Bennett might lose it for him. And Florida's defense is getting healthier. They've gotten a few guys back in the last 2 weeks, so their run defense was a lot better against Missouri than it had been before entering that game. So I'm just going to trust the better quarterback this game. You give me a neutral field and a severe mismatch at quarterback, and the team with the better quarterback is the underdog, I'm going to take the underdog. I have to. So I'm gonna go with Florida and give me 3.5. I'll probably dabble in the money line too. I think they're going to win the game outright, and I'm very curious to see what the reaction will be around Kirby Smart if they lose this game.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure on both sides in this game to win for different reasons, but if Kirby loses here, given the circumstances at quarterback and what could have been, could have been Eason,
sure,
could have been Fromm, could have been Fields, there's going to be a lot of unhappy Bulldogs, as there are anytime they lose, but especially after a game like this.
Yep. Well, it's going to be certainly is the game of the weekend that I'm looking forward to the most, even probably more so than Clemson-Notre Dame. So can't wait to see it.
Let's talk Clemson-Notre Dame really quickly. 5-point spread, Tigers, 5-point favorites. You go first. Do you have a
sure
thought on this one? Go first.
5 points for Clemson in a regular season game feels like it could be just a massive betting opportunity. I know we talked a lot earlier about how this game means more to Notre Dame. I just still think, gun to my head, Clemson wins this game by a touchdown or more. But I've also been anti-Notre Dame the past couple of weeks and keep fading them, and I guess this last week I ended up being right, but they are better than I gave them credit for. Man, I still just think Clemson wins the game. I think they're just a better team. There is a big gap, even without Trevor Lawrence, between them and everybody else in the conference, and I still think they find a way to win this game by a touchdown plus.
A lot of injuries on defense for Clemson. Much has been made of that this week. No Skalski. Tyler Davis out again. He's been out most of the season. Mike Jones Jr., big linebacker for them. Not a full-time starter, but a guy who plays a lot of snaps. So they're missing key guys on defense. But even having said that, I'm with you. Clemson has the better athletes, and I don't know how close it is. I went back and I've watched each of Notre Dame's last three games, and I'm looking for the kind of firepower, the kind of speed that it would take to beat Clemson, and I just don't see it. Ian Book has, I don't want to say regressed, but he certainly hasn't improved. If they're going to win, for them to have any chance, Ian Book's going to have to make some miracles happen with his feet.
Yep.
Book's sneaky, decent runner. I mean, he's had over 4 yards a carry, 5 rushing touchdowns this year. I mean, he can get it done on the ground if you need him to, and I think they're going to need him to this week. Notre Dame's run defense is excellent, but do we really trust them to slow down Clemson in ETN and honestly DJ in the run game? If they use him in the run game, he's just as much of a threat, if not more of one, than Trevor Lawrence is in the option game. I think Clemson wins it, and I think DJ, given a full week of practice, think about that, 340 yards last week, 2 touchdowns, no picks, with the limited practice he got. Now he's got the week to prepare. He knows what he's going up against. We talked last week a bit about how, you know, big-time freshmen are not overwhelmed by that moment nearly as much anymore as they used to be. This is a road game, but it's not really a road game. I have full confidence in Clemson in this one. And I know they've sleptwalked through a couple of weeks. Syracuse was sloppy. Boston College wasn't even – it was sloppy at times, but it was really just bizarre. It was some fluky plays.
Yeah.
Broken coverage once or twice on defense. I really don't think that that's the kind of thing that's going to carry week to week. I think Clemson wins this thing by double digits. I love Clemson minus the 5. This is a rare chance to get Clemson land less than a touchdown. I'm going to take it. Let's move to your teasers. You mentioned you would love to tease. Who was the one you said you would love to tease? It was Georgia.
Florida.
Yeah, Florida. Georgia.
Yeah, Florida plus 3.5 to 10.5 is the first one in there for sure. That's I had not written it down here, but that's my favorite one.
All right. Who else you got in IM to tease?
Yep. So Oklahoma State -12.5 down to -5.5 at Kansas State. So Kansas State got smoked last week by West Virginia, and then lost several guys to transfer this week, just midweek. Got guys entering the portal. Like, it seems like things are starting to go a little sideways there. Love getting Oklahoma State down under a touchdown, and I'm betting on a little bit of just turmoil at Kansas State. And I also think that Oklahoma State is just a legit team. So next, Boston College, -14, which is down to -7 at Syracuse. So all of Syracuse's losses this year have been by double digits, including to Liberty, like we talked about earlier. Now they beat Georgia Tech, but every other game they've lost handily. So Boston College, I think, is a middle of the pack, if not, you know, again, we've talked with them a lot tonight also. Surprisingly good team. I think they take care of business against a really bad Syracuse team. So getting them down to 7 is good value.
Let me throw you a question really quickly. If you could pull off a trade in college football, and Boston College, or rather, I guess if Notre Dame called up Boston College and said, "We'll trade you Ian Book for Djokovic right now," Notre Dame. Well, I guess I'd have to do it the other way around. But the real question is, if you're Notre Dame, would you rather have Phil Djokovic or Ian Book right now?
It's crazy. I mean, the way Djokovic is playing, you kind of have to say him, right?
I totally agree. I mean, he's great. He's really good.
They've been making the comparison all year, but he's like the closest thing I've seen to Ben Roethlisberger since Big Ben.
Yeah.
Very similar play style, like an effective runner, really, really hard to bring him down, just like finds a weird way to extend plays and then like make a really good throw downfield. And also it's like him throwing to Hunter Long is like watching Big Ben throw to Heath Miller for a decade in Pittsburgh.
I know.
It really is. So anyway, yes, I'm more with you. We might have been wrong in that. We were calling him Ian Novella earlier this year. He's really like Ian
Bible.
Ian Pulitzer.
He's been great.
Ian Bible. All right, next up, Mississippi State -19. We're teasing them to -12 against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt stinks.
Whoo!
They lost.
Whoo! Yeah. You're laying 12 with the Bulldogs.
I am.
Oh, Vanderbilt God.
Is what we call historically bad, Josh.
Okay.
They've lost 41-7, 41-7, and 54-21 to LSU, South Carolina, and Ole Miss. Like, not great SEC teams. Now, Mississippi State stinks, too. But Vanderbilt is really bad. Right now, Sagarin would have them as a 6-point dog against 1-7 North Texas. And they are roughly tied with Dartmouth, Princeton, and our old pals Central Arkansas, who are a 500 FCS team. This is one of the worst SEC teams ever.
God.
Ever.
Wow.
So Mississippi State should be able to beat them by 2 touchdowns at home.
Wow. That's insane. By the way, North Texas has played 8 games already. That seems wild, too. Shout out to them. But
bizarre. Geez. Shout out Seth Luttrell.
So what you're saying is, I'm basically, when I say Mississippi State -12 against Vandy, what I'm basically saying is Mississippi State -12 against Dartmouth.
Correct.
All right, I can get behind that.
according to the computer, yeah. And it makes sense when you see, like, a pretty bad LSU team beat them by 34, an average at best South Carolina team beat them by 34, and Ole Miss, who can't stop anybody, beat them 54-21, like, about what you'd expect. Like, they're really, really terrible. And then lastly, quickly, if you want to get a little action started early, I always like doing – a little Friday night situation. If you lose, you can just kind of redo the teaser again Saturday. So Miami -10.5 down to -3.5 at NC State. State has been terrible, terrible without Devin Leary.
Terrible.
Miami putzed around a little bit against UVA, but that was like a weird, sloppy game. Miami's still engaged. They still have championship hopes. Normally I would be weird about a night game at Carter-Finley. But just given everything this year, I don't know that that's a huge concern. I like Miami to go down there and take care of business.
Yeah, I would buy that as well. That seems like a pretty easy one. Honestly, I might even lay the 10.5 with Miami. I don't know. The NC State slows them down, and I certainly don't think they can score on that Miami. Miami's defense is pretty good.
Very good.
No Leary. It seems like a tough task for the Pack. So there you have it. So you got NC State Miami minus 10.5, going down to minus 3.5 against the Pack. You got Mississippi State minus 12, BC minus 7, and then Oklahoma State minus 5.5. All right, those are good ones. I like that. We'll see how it goes this week. I'm under 500 again, so naturally I'll probably end up right at 500 after this week, as it's kind of been the case all year long. But we'll see how it goes, man. A couple big ones. Georgia-Florida. How about that little doubleheader, man? You get Georgia-Florida right into Clemson-Notre Dame. It's going to be a hell of a Saturday night.
Really good Saturday. Can't wait. Hunkered down in front of the TV, probably waiting on election results still, watching some college football. It's going to be a huge day.
Sipping on some Diami Legend Brown Ale.
Yeah, buddy.
And some Zachtoberfest. Actually, that'll be Friday night. We got a great week of college football, man. All right. Ross, good stuff as always out of you.
And also with you, Josh. Have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
All right, we're out of here. Enjoy the weekend.
Yep.